Blog Talk Radio.
That there is at least more than one person that's against you. It's hard for one person to make it seem like everybody is coming at your neck and going after you and trying to bring you down. And that could have been the alternative title of this show. When they trying to bring you down, when the focus is to try to bring you down, try to make you look bad, try to defame you. It's hard. It really is. That's a hard position to be in, but it's a familiar position to a lot of people. Now, what do you do? What do you do when you are really seeking popularity, seeking love, seeking acceptance, but what you're getting is pushback, but what you're getting is competition, but what you're getting is rejection? And you might not be the type of person that's used to being rejected. Everybody loves me. It's like I'm a movie star. Well, unfortunately, my brother, unfortunately, my sister, rejection is something that we all have to experience in our lives, and it's something that we have to learn to turn outward instead of inward, you know, because nobody really likes to hear about somebody always claiming that everybody is out to get them, sounding like somebody that's on a paranoid coke trip. And if you've ever been around somebody who sniffed coke, who got on a paranoid coke trip, you'll understand fully what I'm talking about. It's a sight to behold. Have you ever been around somebody who sniffs coke? They might not sniff coke in front of you, but you'll see the effects of when they have gotten high on coke and, like, to the point where they have that paranoid high. You'll see them like looking through the shades like, yo, that van been out there ever since I got home. What's going on with that van? And you like, what van are you talking about? Yo, that van out there, man. Like somebody watching us? You ain't involved in no crime. You might have a regular 9-to-5 job, kids and all of that kind of thing. You just have a little substance abuse problem. But that it makes you, you know, cocaine makes you nervous. You know, it's a stimulant high. You know what I mean? So you get high and you know, it's a party high. It's a woo, I can do it. Anything. Think Flavor Flav. Think DMX. They like the coke. So that's why they was always like, yeah, confidence through the roof. Confidence through the roof. Skills aside, don't let a person have high skills and be on coke. It's going to be hard for you to beat them. They're going to beat you. It's hard for a sober person to beat somebody with skills on a coke high. But anyway, when you're dealing with somebody that is going through a paranoid trip on coke, you'll notice that they think that somebody is out to get them. I don't know if it's guilt. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But when you're dealing with somebody who isn't on coke, but they start to have this feeling that nobody likes them, nobody cares about them, nobody wants to be around them, everybody's out to get them, they're all trying to bring them down. You know, when you listen to a person long enough that's talking about that, first it seems like it's legit, and then after a while, it sounds like, it'll make you start looking at the person a little closer, and you probably start to see that they're kind of bringing a lot of this stuff on themselves. Like, it's deep, but it ain't that deep. Like, it's bad, but it ain't that bad. Like, there's a part of you that needs to kind of get over yourself. But we're talking about when it really is real. When it really is you against everybody. This is the way that you've been able to prove that it is, and this is the situation that you're in. The bottom line, the real question is, are you able to get through it? Have you ever been in this situation before, and have you been able to fight through it? Have you ever been the underdog? And I mean the serious underdog, to whereas like they was like, you ain't gonna win. Ain't no way you can win. And you had to find a way to win. You had to find a way, to fight your way through all of that muck and mire. It's hard. Like I said, especially when you're a peace-loving person, a person that's a peace-loving person. You know, y'all almost got me with the comments. I'm like, you know, look, I'm looking at the meters. Like, let me make sure the show ain't messing up. Is the stream good? Is the stream good? Anyway, yeah, when you're a peace-loving person, when you're the type of person that seeks friendship, acceptance, you know, and or you really are the type that likes to get it popping. Let's say you're the type of person who builds bridges and who starts organizations and clubs and groups. You're the type of person that brings people together. And it's like, dang, this is the thanks I get? This is the thanks I get for trying to bring people together? Everybody is trying to rain down on me. Everybody's trying to make me look bad. Everybody is trying to come at my neck. Everybody wants to see me doing bad. What did I do? How did I become the wrestling heel? You know. Did any of y'all ever used to follow wrestling? You know, especially when it was the WWF, but before it became the WWE. Remember in wrestling in its glory days? I'm talking about all the way back to Bruno Sammartino. I'm talking about all the way back to Bob Backlund. I'm talking about before Hulk Hogan became a champion. You know, I'm talking about wrestlers like Pedro Martinez. I'm talking about baseball, but Pedro Morales. Pedro Morales. Magnificent Morocco. Greg Valentine, Jesse the Body Ventura, you know, Ricky Steamboat, you know, before wrestling was like really, really commercial, was really, before wrestling was really Hollywood, before it was prime time. Yeah. When it was like that. See, like, when it seems like everybody is against you, speaking of a wrestling reference, it can feel like it's a battle royal. You know, a battle royal is when all of these wrestlers, like 25, 50 wrestlers are all in the ring. And they all have to beat each other up to knock each other out of the ring. And it feels like instead of those wrestlers beating each other up to leave just one, is everybody is just on you. Everybody else wants to remain in the ring. They just want you out of there. And that's how it can feel. That's how it can feel. But like I said, you may be the type of person that likes to build bridges, that likes to build organizations, bring people together, start clubs, and you know, work consciousness into the equation. And what you're getting is a bunch of pushback. What you're getting is a bunch of hate. What you're getting is a bunch of people that ain't showing no love. And for a person that needs love, listen, there are people out there that cannot move, cannot thrive, cannot live with people not liking them, loving them, feeling them, helping them, being there for them. You know what I mean? Everybody against me. It can start with the little rumors that you hear. Well, I heard such and such. I heard this about you, and I heard that about you, and you might be blindsided by it. Like, what? Especially if it's not true at all. Like, if it has a hint of truth, like, okay, somebody might know somebody who knows me, or, you know, somebody who knows me from back in the day or whatever. You know, they done caught up with me or whatever. But when there's no truth to it, and you realize, like, well, that's why I've been getting dirty looks. You ever been around somebody? You ever been in a situation where you know that somebody doesn't like you and you have absolutely no idea what it is? Or no clue of why they don't like you? They may not totally mistreat you, but you notice that, like, maybe if you come around and they leave, or if they're engaged in a conversation with somebody that you know, and you roll up, then they change the conversation or the subject, or find a way to separate you from them. Like, you know, you feel that cold energy. You feel that cold energy when that person is around and you come through. Emily says, ooh, I know why. I just don't care. Well, for the people who do care, for a person who does care, yeah, it can be a tough thing. The biggest problem with this situation is this. People help people that they don't like. I mean, I'm sorry. People help people that they like. Friends help their friends. Friends refer their friends. Friends give jobs to their friends. They set them up to be in positions to get things, money, property, whatever, perks, benefits, prizes, gifts, gratuities. That's what friends do for each other. People who they don't know don't get things. Or if they get things, they have gotten things because they have somehow proven themselves to be worthy. So they may get their things way after everybody else has gotten this. Have you ever been to a concert? Hey, this would be an easy one. Have you ever been to a concert and they put on an opening act that you don't know about, that you've never heard of, that you've never seen? You know, being an opening act on the road can be tough. What a lot of places do, what a lot of concert series and promoters will do is whatever city they go to, they will take a local act and put them as the opening act because everybody may know that group. And so it's an easy transition for the rest of the show. It shows good faith of the promoter. Like, okay, you know, like in 1988, when the Def Jam tour came to Philly, they already had Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince on the tour, but they weren't the opening act. You know, they were already an established group. But what they did was they put a group called the Tough Crew as the opening act. Now, the Tough Crew had a local hit that may have become a national hit. I don't know how far the record got, but it was a very popular record in Philly called My Part of Town. So damn tough. Rock on, my mellow, my man. It's on. It's in effect. It's funny, buddy. You know, it was a very popular song. So when the Tough Crew came on, you know, that opening act, you know, their song was rocking. It was hot at the time. And, you know, the crowd is into it like, yeah, you know, because they knew the Tough Crew. Oh, that's my man, Ice Dog, Tone Love, you know. So it was an easy way to get the party started, get the concert rolling. Like, yo, this is going to be a good show. But there are plenty of times when a concert goes on the road and they may or may not put on a local act as the opening act. They may put on the local act as the opening act and then put on the real opening act, which is an act that's actually on the tour. For example, okay, on another tour, when I saw NWA was on a tour, I believe that was 1989. Yeah, NWA was on tour in 1989, and I ain't gonna lie, NWA put on the hottest show I've ever seen. It was like they were the only act that I've ever seen that could follow Public Enemy, because Public Enemy used to shut it down. They used to shut it down. We had never seen anything like Public Enemy. You know, put that black fist in the air. Put that black fist in the air. You know, all that, you know, the S1W stomping around and all that. I mean, they was on fire. Yeah, you know, I saw the year before, I saw Eric B. and Rakim go on after Public Enemy, and they just died. You know, Rakim, as great as a rapper he is, he probably has the worst live show. He's the worst live performer I've ever seen. Oh, I mean, garbage. But anyway, so at the NWA show, the opening act that they put on was the DOC. Now, the DOC album wasn't even out yet. It wasn't even out yet. The album was finished, and we knew some of the, and real hip-hop heads knew some of his songs, and we knew he was dope. But we put him, I mean, they put him as an opening act, and people didn't know the song, but the songs were so hot. The beats were so dope that he was able to be that opening act, and it worked. On another tour, they put on Too Short. Who else was on that tour? It was Too Short. Hey, Too Short got booed off stage. Philly was not feeling somebody like Too Short. So with Too Short was, too, I remember Too Short took it personally, getting booed, and he started trying to diss the crowd. It was literally everybody against Too Short. And he was like, well, you know, y'all can boo me all y'all want, but, you know, I still got a big house and a big car and a big chain, and so y'all can boo that too, bitch. And we was like, I don't think Too Short ever came back to Philly, even when we found out who he was later on and probably started to like him, but it was like, it was over. I'm sure Too Short remembered that tour. So yeah, so being an introductory opening act when nobody has seen your performance before, you better be good, because you're going to have to fight through all of the people who are just you know, you're the opening act. People aren't, everybody isn't in their seats yet. People are still getting situated, taking off their coats or getting their food together, ordering food, talking amongst each other. Who is this fool on stage? You're the opening act. And if you're not good, then grand opening, grand closing. It's a wrap. But it's going to feel like everybody is against you. So how do you handle everybody being against you like you're the opening act? You got to fight through that. You gotta do your best. You got to put on a performance that they will not soon forget, regardless of whether they've heard of you before or regardless of whether they thought that they were going to like you and regardless of whether they were ready, prepared, and willing to support you. Because if you fail, there might not be a chance again. So that's a tough position to be in. If it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude, even without the intestinal part, you need that fortitude. That fortitude is your determination and your resolve, regardless of what the circumstances and the conditions are. You can stand in there and fight. Like, I don't care. Y'all ain't gotta like me. Y'all ain't gotta love me. Y'all gonna get this work. Y'all gonna get these lessons. Y'all gonna get this feeling. Y'all gonna get this performance. Whatever it is. I'ma still be me. Y'all can hate on me all y'all want. I'ma be me. That's what I'ma do. I'ma be me. And y'all mad. Y'all, a lot of y'all mad because y'all can't beat me. I mean, y'all can't be me. That's what females be saying. Y'all mad because y'all can't be me. I didn't know you was somebody to be. But we mad because we can't be you. Is that true? I don't know. But you against everybody. And I'm going to miss everybody. And I'm going to miss everybody. And it's a tough situation. So have you ever been in that situation? You know, did you break under pressure? I don't know about y'all, but one thing that I never want to happen is for my detractors, my enemies, my haters to see me begging for their love, affection, support, or even help. Now, I know that's ego. I know that's ego. And it's probably displaced ego. It's probably not a good thing. But imagine having to rely and depend on people who you know don't want anything to do with you. They ain't got no love for you. And these are the people that you have to try to turn around. You know, would you trust a person that you think wants to poison you to cook your food and serve you? Would you do that? And there's a reason that I'm asking you that, because you know, your initial answer might be no. No, I would never eat the food that my enemy has prepared for me. But you might have to. How about that? How about you might have to eat the food? And the reason that you might have to eat the food is because you have to trust somebody sometimes. Your enemy might want to kill you, but he might not want to kill you right then and there. He might just want to fight you, but he don't want to kill you. And there might be a time where you don't have any choice but to eat that food that your enemy has prepared for you. Now, it can work out. It can work out. If you think about going all the way back to the slavery days, who did all the cooking? Who did all the cooking and the cleaning in the house? Who took care of all the housekeeping in the house? The slaves did. Now, with the way that the slave masters treated slaves and for the position that they put those black people in, you would think, I better not eat none of this food because these slaves going to kill us. Why wouldn't they kill us? Would you help somebody live that enslaved you, that put you in bondage, that stopped you from seeing the world and having options to be able to do whatever you wanted to do? Would you keep somebody alive that basically put you in a position where you would spiritually die? Well, yeah, they did. Yeah, because they knew that the slaves would not kill them because they looked at them as God. They looked at them as better. They looked at them as superior. And they knew they had them mentally. So, yeah, I ain't worried about these slaves poisoning me. They would never do that. And for the most part, they didn't. They didn't. And that's in a situation where you would think that they absolutely would. But it's all up in here. And once you get a person up here, you got them everywhere you want them. You'll never have to worry about somebody physically if you got them mentally. So that's slavery. And somebody who has you feeling like everybody is against you may have you mentally. And so they don't have to worry about you because you're so busy seeking their approval and their acceptance and their love and their affection that you have all of the tools to poison them and get them out of the way, but you ain't using none of that poison. You too busy crying and sobbing and being unhappy and being depressed because they're not showing you any love. But they're against you. So they ain't supposed to show you no love. So how do you handle it? How do you handle it? You against everybody, baby. Don't nobody like you. Well, the science behind that is there's probably never a situation where everybody is against you or nobody likes you. What happens is because most of people don't like you, other people who are followers of them will act like they don't like you either. Trust me. There's somebody asking, somebody behind your back, without your knowledge, out of your eyesight and earshot, is asking, well, I don't see what's so wrong with Emily. Why doesn't anybody like Emily? I don't see nothing wrong with T. Carrie, right? She seemed all right to me. Oh, I ain't supposed to. Okay. I don't see nothing wrong with Carol. Carol, cool. I mean, I like her, but she must have messed around with somebody, man. Cheryl? No, Cheryl, that's my girl. You know, she used to go with my cousin. He loves himself some Cheryl. She all right? But I guess she ain't all right around here. Somebody is asking about you in a positive way, but you don't get a chance to know that, so you think everybody is against you. And, you know, they're responsible for not stepping up. They may have asked about you, but they're not doing anything about it. What happens on a sports team when all of the players are against the coach? They got to get the coach out of there because the players aren't going to play for the coach. The players are not going to play for that coach. They're going to make him look bad. They're going to make him look like he's incompetent, like his schemes, his designs, his plays. Like, these are terrible plays. Other teams can easily figure out these plays, and it doesn't work. That's what happens when everybody is against the coach. And sadly, if everybody is against the coach, then the coach is a bad coach. Because the coach is supposed to be able to reach those players. The coach doesn't play. The coach can't suit up and get in the game. He has to make sure that he puts the players in the best position to be able to win. And if he fails to do that for whatever reason, then the general manager got to get a new coach. We got to get the coach out of here. We know the players can play. The players been playing for since they was kids. These are the best players in the world. This is professional sports. So the coach got to go. The coach got to go. What's going on, Barbara Hill Cisse, Bobby Cisse all up in the house. Good to see me some you. So we're talking about you against everybody. Got to duke it out. Got to duke it out. Duke it out. Duke it out. You step on the scene at school. And everybody, you know what I mean, they giving you a side eye like, you came to school again? Are you able to fight through that? I mean, you know, this. Think about this internet bullying thing. Internet bullying. It's a lot different than what we knew bullying to be in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s. Back then, bullying was more physical. You know? If you a punk, you're going to get punched in the mouth. You don't give up your money, you get punched in the mouth. Ooh, you got a new handheld game. Let me hold that. No. You don't let me hold the game, I'm punch you in the mouth. That was bullying back in the day. You know. But it was easier to end bullying back in the day. You fought the bully. If you fought the bully well, the bullying ended. All you had to do was fight. All you had to do was put up a good fight. Fight back. Show promise. Show some skills. Show some determination. Show some anger. And the bullying stopped. Bullies didn't want to be fighting people who actually could fight all the time. They wanted the easy way. That's the only way they look tough. They ruled by fear. So, you put up a good fight, the bullying ended. If you beat the bully, you know the bullying ended. So nowadays with the internet bullying, you know, you got kids out here committing suicide, attempting suicide, and, you know, because it seems like the whole world, you know, when you're young, your brain hasn't matured enough. It hasn't developed enough for you to figure out that not everybody even cares about you. And that's not a diss. That's not anybody against you. Like, they don't care about you in terms of you're not on their radar. They don't know about you to care about you. But you're not like a household name or anything like that. When you're a teenager, a pre-adolescent and all of that, you don't know that. Whatever people that are in your world, it looks like that is the whole world. So it's hard to deal with that whole world that you perceive being all against you. Like, even if your dad taught you how to box or do martial arts or whatever, like, you can beat cats, you know what I mean? Even if they try to roll on you, you can get through that, you know, catch one of them, beat him real good. The other one's going to start bitching like, yo, he fucked Tony up. But you can't beat up a whole internet. You can't beat up a whole World Wide Web. And the kids know that. You know, I don't care. Any of us participating on this show right now, many of us may have been in schoolyard fights, after school fights, all that old kind of stuff, where it seemed like the whole school gathered around. But nobody took pictures. There was no video. When the fight was over, the fight was over. There was rarely any dispute about who won. Yeah, he beat, you know, such and such beat him. He didn't necessarily you know, catch a body. He didn't beat him down. He didn't break his bones. Or, you know, there might have been some nicks and scratches. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times people broke it up. So sometimes it was even hard to determine, well, he hit him. He got a few hits in, but then school police came or, you know, whatever. You know, teachers broke it up or whatever. So, you know, so they got to fight again. What you didn't see was this video where you getting your ass whooped went viral. How many views are in a viral video? There is no limit. But you can best believe it's going up into the millions. Definitely more thousands than you would care to count. So that's a different feeling. So we can be dismissive of internet bullying, but the numbers don't lie. And so that's a whole lot of everybody against you. That's a whole lot of feeling. And then there are comments. Under the video. Oh, my God. So now it's really seeming like it's everybody against you. Well, why didn't he fight back? Well, dag, boy can't rumble. Well, you know. How would you handle it? How could you handle it? You know, we feel like we're removed from a situation like that. But some people still are going through things of that nature. Why do you think a lot of people don't make any comments online? You ever peep that? I'm sure you have people on your friends list, people who follow you and stuff like that. And you notice they never make a comment. They like stuff. They LOL stuff. They heart. And laugh emoji and all that kind of stuff, but they don't write. They don't write. You know why? Because now you can scrutinize their thoughts. Now you can pigeonhole them into a position. Oh, you think this way, or you support that, or you're on their side. So that's why there are people on your friends list that you never see comment. They're not commenting. They will like, follow, subscribe. But what y'all doing in that chat room, they ain't doing it. Not going to happen. Shout out to my chat, especially y'all who come in here every day. You know, when new people come into the chat, y'all are friendly towards them and welcoming. Y'all doing the right thing. Y'all don't know that there are people in the background that's like, I want no parts. I want no parts. I want no parts. Kind of crazy, right? Y'all like, but this is, we like family. We're nothing but friends. Somebody out, some people listening live and some people listening, you know, after the fact, they're like, I ain't getting in that chat. I ain't getting in that chat. You're not going to be scrutinized what I think. I don't need to put my opinion out there. I'm here to listen to the show. Watch the show or whatever. I ain't trying to be part of the show. Everybody, you against everybody. Everybody against you. Everybody against me. Can you handle it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, 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 tough. It's a tough situation. You know, you against everybody. You know, we're taught, especially nowadays, to stand tall and to, you know, not let anybody get to us and not let anybody get under our skin. And, you know, and that's a good thing. But we all have skin that can be gotten under. And we all have feelings. And it's a lot easier to want to, it's a lot easier to be accepted and for people to like you. Like I said, friends do things for friends. Friends do things for other friends. People do things to enemies. You don't want to be on that side of what people want to do something to or do something about. You want to do, you want to be the ones who they do something for. And it's just not always possible. Sometimes you got to fight your way up the ranks, you know, like an amateur fighter that's getting, that's going toward the pros, going into the pros. And you have to fight to get up to that number one contending spot so you can fight for the championship. And it literally is everybody against you. It is you against everybody. But you have to have that fortitude. You have to have that resolve. You have to have that determination, that tenacious spirit that says, I'm going to beat all of y'all. You look at somebody, you know, who stayed on a boxing reference for a minute. Take a look at Muhammad Ali's life. Muhammad Ali came into the game talking about he was the greatest. He welcomed the adversity. I'm the greatest. The greatest at 20? At 20, 21 years old, you the greatest, dog? He was like, yeah. The greatest. There had been Jack Johnson before him, Rocky Marciano, Sugar Ray Robinson, Joe Louis, the champ at the time was Sonny Liston. Great fighters, great boxers. And he came in like, yeah, I mean, you know, they was good, but I'm the greatest. Wait till y'all see. Ain't nobody gonna beat me. Can't nobody beat me. So he made sure that it looked like he made it a situation where everybody was against him. Muhammad Ali was a master promoter. He was a master self-promoter. What he did was revolutionary in boxing. Boxers back then, especially black boxers, they stood in the background. You know, they were more seen than heard. Sugar Ray Robinson had New York buzzing. He had restaurants and stores. And, you know, like he really took his money and tried to do things. Some of it worked for a time and then, you know, eventually it all crumbled, whatever. But he, you know, he made a go at it. Muhammad Ali was way different than Sugar Ray Robinson. Sugar Ray Robinson was considered, even to this day, the greatest boxer pound for pound ever. I don't know if Floyd Mayweather may have taken that title because he, you know, still undefeated. But Sugar Ray Robinson wasn't no joke. So for Muhammad Ali to come in and say that he was the greatest ever, like, chill, my brother. But he proved it. Even though Muhammad Ali lost some fights and definitely got into some brutal fights. But he was the greatest. Now, was he the greatest when he said he was the greatest? I don't know. But he certainly welcomed that you against everybody, everybody against you type of mentality. And he cooked it up and served it right back to all of his detractors. And he made them eat it. And it all tasted like crow. Ah! 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 You against everybody. Can you do it? Have you done it? All right? It's a little tough. serving that thing on a platter, baby. Serving that thing on a platter. But, you know, we all have our experiences in life. And, you know, we have individual experiences and what have you and what not and whatever. But we have to make the best out of it. We have to make the best out of whatever it is that we have. We got to do our best. You against us. So those coworkers, them coworkers that's whispering and talking and rumoring and, you know, can you stand up to that? Them neighbors that's whispering and talking and doing what they do, spilling tea, dropping dimes, poisoning water and all that. Deal with it. Club members that don't want to see you, you know, being on the board, being chairman, rising up the ranks, being influential. And there's too many of them and only one of you. You ready for that? Can you do it? Have you done it? Not everybody's going to be able to say yes. And that's fine. That's totally fine. When the time comes when you have to fight, just try to build yourself up to the point where you will be able to fight effectively. Make sure that the showing that you have is an effective one. Is one that's for the ages. One that they will never forget. One that somebody will try to duplicate later on. One that will make people say, you know what, that boy, you know, y'all can say what y'all want to. Y'all can say what y'all want to about him, her, whatever. They ain't never let you knock them off they square. They ain't never let them, let y'all, you know, bring them down. They ain't never let y'all, you know, ruin their spirit or stop them from moving on, going up and taking care of theirs. All right. Let's get to these birthday shout-outs. We have some birthday shout-outs to do. Yo, I told you that the dude who called in yesterday wasn't going to call today. I knew it. We have some birthday shout-outs to do. Some people were born on this glorious. December 14th. And they deserve to be acknowledged. So let's go about our business of acknowledging them. 13th. And they deserve to be acknowledged. So let's go about our business of acknowledging them. Making them feel special because they are special because they are special because they are S-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-P-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-P-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They get number one out the box. Brenda King, turning 48 years old today. And also Lucinda Parson, turning 51 years old today. And Donna Brooks Williams, turning 38 years old today. And Michelle Renee, happy birthday to you. And Jimmy Matthews, happy birthday to you. And hold up, Michelle Renee is raising money for the fundraiser for 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Okay. Okay, and also Margot Carpenter, turning 56 years old today. And last but not least, going all the way back to the 1987, my girl worked at City Blue with me, Antoinette Cassandra, known affectionately to all her friends as Nettie. Happy birthday to you. I want to say happy birthday to all y'all. And anyone else out there who shares this birthday on this glorious. December 13th, anywhere out there in the world, worldwide, internationally, and universally, all of y'all go ahead and turn up. But don't turn up too loud. Just turn up loud enough so everybody can hear you. Rock out. Rock on it. Do the damn. The rock out. Rock on it. Do the damn. Rock out. Rock on it. Do the damn thing. You do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings. You do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings. Good things happen to those who wait. Great things happen to those who grind, and anything can happen to those who go for theirs. So go hard, go for yours, and remember, man, when it's you against everybody, everybody against you, you got to fuck with them, decide what you're going to do. You can either join them, and you can't beat them, but if you can beat them, make sure you defeat them, and make sure that they always remember your name, make sure they know that you was one to get game, and your game tight, your game right, and your game right, and they can't get your game weak. You make sure that you listen when they speak. No, they listen when you speak. That's for real. Don't tweet. And make sure that you eat every day. All right. Peace to all my day ones, my everydays, and my brand news. I love y'all to death. Resuscitate y'all. I love y'all right back to life. We will be back tomorrow night for another Daily Go Get a Mism show at 7 p.m. So make sure y'all come through. And make sure you hit that like button. Make sure that y'all share the show. Make sure that you subscribe to the channel if you haven't subscribed to the channel yet. This has been another installment of the Daily Go Get a Mism show. And I hope y'all enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed broadcasting it. So Blog Talk, we going to get you out of here. A yeah.